Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Got lots of fun questions this morning. Dan wants me to tell him where he is, and so he's sending me pictures of these plants. It's the overall riddle. And in meanwhile, in order to answer the overall riddle, this is people play with me like this on this show. So in order to answer the overall riddle, I have to go through all these other steps of answering the intermediate questions about what plants he's taken pictures of and then tell him where he is. So I'm going to play. He sent me pictures of some very different magnolias, the Macrophylla magnolias that are absolutely beautiful. Dan, I am convinced that the plant you showed me the picture of, that I couldn't quite tell whether it was devil wood, which is a type of wild olive, or whether it was horse sugar, and you'll probably see a little bit of both there. I'm convinced after being able to look at it closely and thinking about the habitat, because I know where you are, that it is almost certainly what we used to call osmanthus, now we call Cartrema americana, which is devil wood or wild olive. It is actually closely related to the olives of commerce, along with the ash trees and some other things. It has leaves that are opposite. They're evergreen. One of the cool things about our southern forest, and particularly the forest along the Gulf Coast, is that they are composed of a lot of evergreens with leathery leaves, and they can be, confusing at first, because we're not from cultures where evergreen trees are common. So we don't have good language to talk about trees that are evergreen. So we bring our language over from Europe. And so everything that's evergreen in Europe was a bay, because there weren't that many evergreen things. So when we came over here, we called everything we saw that was evergreen a bay. So we called the big magnolia, the big evergreen magnolia, we called it bull bay. And the little evergreen magnolia we called sweet bay, which, yeah, I'm not sure why it's called sweet bay, except the flowers have a slightly sweeter smell, the one with the elongated leaves. So those are two names, bull bay and sweet bay. And then the thing that had the purplish undersides to the leaves, it was kind of reddish purple under the underside, and the trunk was red, and we used to cook with, we called red bay. and then the bay that has that very spicy thing that we made candle wax out of, we called bay myrtle or what was the other name for that? Wax myrtle bay, or we had a lot of different names, but it was another bay. So there's all this series of bays that we had. Olive wood probably also had a bay name originally. The devil wood probably also had the name of a bay. I don't know why it's called devil wood, except sometimes it can form thickets. I'm guessing that's why. Maybe because the wood was especially hard. I don't know why it's called devil wood. I don't know why. But it is a wild olive. It's a native of the olive group, and it has leaves similar. But you notice it doesn't have that color on the bottom like a sweet bay would. A sweet bay would be silver underneath. A red bay would be reddish underneath. It also doesn't have any odor or any taste. And you must not be out there now, or I'd make you taste it and tell me about it. But it won't have any taste or odor. And that's wild olive. That's what you got. I'm going to tell you, you're in one or two places. You're in bluffs along the Alabama River, or the Mobile River, or its drainages. I'm fairly certain, and you're probably at Blakely. You could be, because I see the little bit of slope in the background, and so I'm guessing you're on the bluffs along Blakely because it's convenient to get to. If I'm wrong, You know, there it is. It could be you're in the Red Hills. The sundews, I did not see any sundews in your picture. There we go. There's some sundews. Those are interesting. So, yeah. Hey, so now I am a little stumped about where exactly you are. Maybe I'm less confident. You're somewhere where there's a bog and where there are bluffs, but it has to be, you're in a bluff habitat that leads down into a bog somewhere. It's not Splinter Hill, is it? But it must be somewhere along Mobile Bay, and I'm guessing it's on the eastern shore. So we'll see how well I did. We'll see how well I did. Emily reminds me that I did not quite finish her questions. So we did, we got a how to stake the yucca flower. Huh. You know, I don't know how to stake the yucca flower. Is it leaning over? It's usually a pretty tough and rigid sort of thing. I guess I would use, you know, wow, I'd hate to have to do that because, one, I'd have to get in the middle of all those spears to do it. I guess you could do it with a little stick of bamboo or something and hold it up and it would be fine. The flower is not going to last a long time. So by the time you got it staked up and you were pretty satisfied by it, it might be out of bloom and beginning to form pods. So my first thought is, yeah, you could use bamboo. My second thought is, I don't know if it's going to be worth it, Emily. But there you go. If that's not satisfactory, you scold me and call me back and message me back. The hosta leaves, hostas are really tough in this climate. They're going to have lots of issues. A lot of things eat hostas, including various beetles. And because, I'm suspicious it is a beetle. It could be slugs, but I'm suspicious it's a beetle. It's going to be really hard to stop them from hitting your hosta leaves. Probably the damage was done as the leaf was unfolding. It kind of looks like that might have been the case. And so you get a little series of marks across the leaf. So it's kind of a moot point now. As the leaves toughen up and get more mature, they will have less damage. But when you have beetle damage, there's not a simple solution. Clandosan might work, and it's fairly safe to use. But boy, I'd hate to have to use it as maintenance. Not clandosan, but I'm sorry. I'll think of it in just a minute. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I'm feeling really comfortable. Hosta leaves, hostas have very soft leaves when they first emerge, and it can be really hard to keep pests off of them and to keep them perfect looking. I will say that you have relatively little damage on those hosta leaves, and that's very nice. I would try to ignore it. That would be the best things to do about those hostas. Any rate, yeah, the sundews did mess me up. Dan, that wasn't fair. but it's one of those places. Blakely is one of those places where all of those things that Dan sent me pictures of converge. The sundews, the rexias, the beautiful rexias, the osmanthus, the beautiful magnolias. It's a beautiful place, Blakely. I hope folks get a chance to get out and see it. Hey, Phil, do we have any callers right now? Or we're okay. We're caught up. All right, so we got a caller, but we only have just a little bit of time before we have a break, which we're going to do. But then we got 45 minutes after that. So hold on, and y'all give us a call. And we got a great question about explaining the steps for planting a June garden without tilling. I think that is a beautiful question. I think I should have to answer that question, and I'm going to do that to the best of my ability when we start coming back from this break And we're going to also look at some other pictures of plants, and I'm going to try to identify them and see how well I can do. There we go. We got a full 45 minutes coming up.
She's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella. With Guguza, I want to be. Cause Guguza is so crazy over me.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, let's get started. These are questions I promised I would answer, and it's going to be good for everybody, and we're going to try to answer both questions at once. I did say if you were interested in making good topsoil, you don't have to go to Home Depot to get it. Lord have mercy. And in fact, you're not going to be successful in getting good topsoil at Home Depot. There's a very good reason why. Whatever you get there is going to just turn into sand pretty quickly. And the other question was, you know, how do you get prepared? How do you get your soil prepared for this June gardening without tilling? And so they both sort of work together. Listen, let me remind you that soil is made constantly. Literally, you have to understand that topsoil is the result of continuing things that happen all the time. If the things that make topsoil quit making it, the topsoil disappears. That's what happens in our climate. That's what happens to your soil. And so if you dig the wrong way, and if you're continually turning your soil with a tiller, you basically kill the processes that make the topsoil, and the topsoil disappears. And so you can put a load of topsoil on your garden, but because the things that help to make that topsoil what it was, and it's probably not very good topsoil in the first place, but whatever topsoil there is there was organic matter that was created by the breaking by an active process. But when you put it on your garden and you don't supply the things that make that ongoing process of creating topsoil work, the topsoil disappears. It's gone. It's probably gone even before the gardening season is over. So you can plant your tomatoes in this so-called topsoil that you get in bags from you know where, and you can put your tomato in there, but you know what's going to happen? Before the end of the season, that tomato is going to be back in just miserable soil because the active process of topsoil building isn't going on. So what you do is you want to kickstart that activity, and it can happen very quickly in our climate. And leaves can do it. Leaves can do a really great job of doing it. Just pile your leaves up. I always say if you give yourself 3 or 4 months, and just say, look, I'm going to put a plant bed over here. Just take the leaves from the trees. You know, leaves are always falling in where we are because we got this evergreen canopy. There, you know, there's always leaves out there. People are always putting bags of leaves. Just find your spot, put the leaves there where you want your beds to be, and let them molder down for 3 or 4 months. You got the topsoil. You've also eliminated all the weeds underneath those beds. Man, it's the easiest thing in the world. You can crack that soil a little bit before you put the leaves on there. I often recommend doing that. And then put the leaves on. Very simple. That's how you make topsoil. It is that simple because you're providing the food for the soil creatures that make topsoil. And that food is brown matter. It's leaves. It's grass clippings that don't have herbicide on them, that don't have weed and feed on them. But grass clippings are great as long as it doesn't have herbicide on them. It can be pieces of wood that are really decomposing. It can be pine bark, and if you need to do it quickly, you can use pine bark, and that's where we're going to get to this. There's lots of types of organic matter. There's kitchen compost. You just need a lot of it because it's our climate, and you need a lot of organic matter. But so now, how are we going to get started? You want something in June. You want a bed in June. If you're starting with fresh ground that hasn't been gardened in before, you you may have enough organic matter to go ahead and get started right away in June without a lot of folderol. Let's make that assumption. But what you got to do is you got to get rid of the weeds, and you got to get rid of the hard pan there. So here for our June garden, here's what we're going to do. Very simple. Some people would make fun of me because they can repeat this already. They know what's coming next. Take a garden fork. It's really simple with a garden fork. You can do it with a shovel, but if you can find a good garden fork or even a bad garden fork with four tines, you know what I'm saying? You know what a tine is? Those four little prongs that stick in the ground, and they're kind of stiff. It's not a hay fork. It's got these stiff tines. They're pretty commonly available. Doesn't cost a lot of money. If you spend $50, you get a really good one. You can get a really good one for about $50 or $60. It's really incredible, and because I use mine so much and I want it to hold up, I go ahead and get. But, you know, if you get a less expensive one, you can still do it. Wiggle that fork into the ground. Lean back on the fork. Wiggle it into the ground as deep as you can. And don't try to force it in. Just wiggle it in with your foot on it. Just wiggle it in. Lean back and crack. And you're going to break the hard pan. It's going to be ready. That soil is going to be really deep. You're going to have really deep soil then that the plant can get its roots in. Trust me, that's the way to do it. I can tell you why there's a hard pan. Let's don't get into all that. I can tell you it's there. You're going to crack that hard pan. The roots are going to be able to really get really deep. And then you move to the next spot. You crack it. Boom. And there it is. Don't build more beds than you need. Just build the bed space that you need. Do this. It makes a ton of difference. The first time you wiggle that fork in and lean back, it's going to be a little hard because everything around it's compacted. But you know, the next time you put it in wiggling, it's going to be a little easier. And the next time it's going to be a little easier because you're loosening that soil up and there's room for the soil to move around. Now, you don't need to till it. You don't want to turn it upside down. You just want to put the fork in, crack it, and leave it just the way it is. That way the topsoil stays on the top. Do I need to tell you why the topsoil stays on the top? Because it's been that way for 450 million years. There it is. And everybody's adjusted to that. So don't change the world. You can't change. Everybody expects the top. Everything that's going to grow there expects the topsoil to be on the top. You just stick that fork in, lean back, crack it. There it is. That's the first stage. Now you got to get rid of the weeds. As you're cracking, you're going to find that it loosens up the grass and the other weeds. You can almost, sometimes in soils along the Gulf Coast, you can, and particularly if they're not too wet, you could almost take a garden rake and just pull those weeds out. Just pull them out. You can pull them out with your hands too. It's a good thing to do because if you don't, the weeds are going to take off. That's just the fact of life. And there it is. So get the weeds out. Just go ahead and take those weeds out. And now you've done almost all the work. That's it. That's all you got to do. You can add some lime. It probably needs some lime. If you've got fireplace ashes, that's even better. But you can add some lime. And, you know, I would use, I'd say about a cup every square yard. That'll probably be about right. Okay? Does that make sense? Yeah, that's about right. That's about right. Cup every square yard. And then go ahead and put something on the ground like leaves or some type of mulch, whether it's hay or pine straw, some type of mulch to keep the weed seeds that are in the soil from germinating. If they see the light, they're going to germinate. And now you're ready to plant. Boom. Depending on what you plant, you may need to fertilize. Okra, you're probably not going to have to fertilize a lot, for example. Peas, you're probably not going to have to fertilize at all, particularly if you use fireplace ashes. If you're going to grow tomatoes, you're probably going to have to fertilize a little bit. We can talk about how to do that. If you're going to use water, if you're going to grow watermelons, you're probably going to have to fertilize. But there it is. That's all it is. Your beds, make your beds about 3 feet wide. Is that said enough? About 3 feet wide is perfect because then you can reach into them easily. Does that work? Am I telling you enough?
Did I answer both questions? And then as you're developing this, the whatever mulch you put on there, as long as it's organic, it's going to break down into topsoil. Boom. Don't turn it in. Topsoil needs to be on the top. It's ready for the next round. There it is. It's that simple. Have we worked on this? Have we got it going? If anybody's got any more questions, you call me. You call me, and let's figure this thing out. So there it is. Now I have to go on and answer a question, which I'm going to do in the next 15 minutes. I'm going to take a little bit of time, and we're going to talk about how to mow your pasture and figure that out. So there it is. So a couple other questions. So in the building process, a section of the lot, and this is, it speaks the same issue. Somebody says, in the building process of a house, a section of the lot was filled with red clay. What can I do about the hard pan? Hate pan, they call it. Now, that's a good name, too. But it is a hard pan. You know, when people are building houses, they don't think about gardening. They think about how to firm up that soil so the house can go there. So they pound that soil so no roots grow in it. And so no roots can grow in it. So there's another reason. These hard pans, they're all around us. We create them. The builders create them. It's the same way. You do it the same way with that fork. It works wonders. You wiggle it in, and a fork works better than a shovel because it doesn't have much friction, and you can just wiggle it into the soil all the way up to the hilt, lean back, boom. It's cracked. The hard pan's gone. It's amazing how well it works. So that's how you do it. So that's really, you know, we don't till because tilling turns the topsoil upside down. It turns the soil into a powder, which means that a hard pan reforms, and it means that there's less topsoil than there was. And there's less growing room for the roots after you till, after about two or three rains. There's less growing room than there was before you tilled. Can be a bad thing. Cracking the soil with a garden fork, beautiful. Works great. Solves your hard pan issue, whether you got red clay or whether you made the hard pan yourself. Hey, we got other things to talk about when we come back. Give us a call.
So my baby down by the river, we should have to come up.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of interesting pictures being sent in. Jim sent me a picture of a beautiful inky black tomato that he calls Black Mexicans. I've never heard of them before. Boy, they look good. And I'm jealous, Jim. I'll have to look those up. Jim recommends three varieties that I've tried and they're quite good. Matt's Wild Cherry, which we often recommend here, it can be very good, and it's a good one for getting started in June and having good production in fall if you missed the tomato season coming in. I'd say Matt's Wild Cherry may be one of the best. Mexico Midget is another great one that would do real well in the fall. Juliet is another one of his favorites, and he calls it Julian, but I think it may be Juliet, Jim. I'm just guessing. It's another great one. And Sun Gold is, of course, a great classic. And Sun Gold can be very, very good. David has a great picture. David Hubble has a great picture of pelican tomatoes that he grew this year that look very pretty and look very, very good. We started talking about pastures. You remember that? I hope Stu doesn't hate me for doing that. But it was such a good question, and it was such a perfect situation to talk about it. You know, if you've got an area and you want it to go natural, You forget along the Gulf Coast and through most of Alabama, you can't just leave it be because we've changed the way nature works. And so what we get sometimes when we just walk away from a place is a jungle, is a, well, it's not even a jungle. It's, that's too nice a word for it. It is a thicket, and that's probably too nice a word for it. It is a conglomeration of invasive species that never would have occurred together and never occurred there, and it's not good for wildlife. It's just a mess. That's a good word for it. What you get is a mess. and it's not good for really anything. And it just becomes a shady mess. And wildlife can't use it. It's not pretty anymore. But here's the thing. If you were to take a pasture and you say, you know, I got better things to do with my time than mow this pasture all the time. Surely God has better things for me to do than get out here and mow this pasture every week. And if he doesn't, he's, you know, he's got a problem. So listen, don't mow the pasture all the time. That's not the way it's supposed to work. So what you want to do is you want to mow that. If you want to get something really incredible, really beautiful, really great for wildlife, mow it once a year. Mow it twice a year. And I don't have any elaborate things. I'm in the restoration I'm working on, it's not huge. It's not a huge area. It's really only about an acre. But I don't use, I don't have any big equipment. I just use a lawnmower. It's a pretty tough lawnmower, I'll admit. It's my dad's old lawnmower. He gave it to me. Thank you, Dad. It was really, really a valuable lawnmower. And it's a pretty tough old customer. And it's a gas-powered thing, and it's pretty tough. Got a pretty tough engine, pretty tough blade. And you know what? It cuts down. It'll cut down through virtually anything. I'll have to go slow through some places. So that's one way of doing it. And certainly you can do it with a mower. You can use a brush cutting mower. Those work very well. If you're going to do this, at some kind of scale, you can use a brush cutting mower. It'll work. It's a little easier, than a regular lawnmower if you've gotten, if it gets up pretty high. It depends on what's in that pasture. You definitely don't want to mow it when it's wet because it's going to be really hard to mow through. So you're going to have to mow it when it's fairly dry. But once a year could do it. If your pasture is pretty rich and it's growing grass or other things really, really fast, you may need help from a neighbor who's got a bush hog, for example. Or a slightly bigger tractor that you can raise and mow through it once a year. That's a good way to do it. The time I would mow through it, you can vary it. And probably the best thing to do is to vary the time of year that you mow through it. But I would start by following the fire season, and I'd probably say mow through it in late March. On the Gulf Coast, that's probably a good time to initiate the cut. Just mow through it in late March or middle March. You could do that. It wouldn't hurt to do it in winter either. You could also do it then. But, you know, that's kind of a good time to start things cooking is in March. You can do it in fall. If you want to start in fall, you could probably start just as well in fall. But I think maybe that early spring cutting is a little better for the grasses that you want to come back. That's one way to do it. Winter is probably the second best time. Fall is probably the third best time. And then as you get into it, you may decide, you know, this year I'm going to do it in midsummer. And you're going to get, it'll have a slightly different effect. And it's just beautiful. It's beautiful what's happened. It is absolutely, it's better than I thought it would be. It's beautiful to see what happens when you just stop mowing sometimes. It's really amazing, particularly if the seed sources are still there and the pasture hasn't been improved to death, which can happen. But even if it's been improved to death, you're going to get a slow invasion of things that's going to make it prettier as time goes on. Oh, let's see. We can have And yeah, I don't think God has a problem, as somebody said, unless God wants me to mow every day, and then God does have a problem. But I don't think God wants me to mow every day, so I'm going to assume he doesn't have a problem. I think he might approve of our, he or she, or the thing we call God, might approve of me mowing once a year. I think that would probably get his approval. So, at any rate, there we go. Dan, you have no idea how good this pasture looks. It is just full of movement. It's like everything is dancing. And all these colors are dancing. The silver and the pink and the yellow dock and the red dock. And even, heaven forbid, the fescue looks beautiful. And there's a little fescue there. It's kind of annoying. But, you know, we're going to fix that. It's going to be fixed. Not worried about the invasive fescue. It's going to get fixed, too. We know how to fix it. We'll talk about that later. Just letting that pasture work. Letting it grow. Just kind of the way things have been going for a long, long time. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. There it is. Hey, I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week. Give us a call. 251-343-0106.
Traveling through this world alone, there is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land.